Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Senator Bernie Sanders announced today that he will run for president in 2020. If successful, yeah. If successful, he would be the oldest person. That's it. He would just be the oldest person.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to comedian John Oliver. Plus, just for this podcast, John takes a few more questions backstage at Studio 8G. But first, a closer look.
President Trump declared a national emergency on Friday and then spent the rest of the weekend lashing out at critics. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. After Trump unilaterally bypassed Congress by declaring a fake national emergency to build his border wall, he spent the rest of the weekend calling the media the enemy of the people, demanded retribution against TV networks, and called Justice Department officials who investigated him treasonous. It's more obvious every day that Trump's natural inclination is to be a dictator. He could even try to grow a dictator mustache, but based on the rest of his hair situation, I'm not sure. And Trump would be even scarier if he weren't so easily distracted. For example, he couldn't even make it 24 hours after declaring his national emergency before he escaped to Florida for a weekend of golf and lounging around at his private club in Palm Beach, where he was spotted on Saturday waiting for breakfast.
President Trump spending his first day following that emergency declaration at the Trump International Golf Club down in Palm Beach. And this photo of President Trump at the club's omelet bar went viral, getting retweeted thousands of times over.
There's no clearer sign that this is not a real emergency than the fact that he is at an omelet bar. In a real emergency, no one goes to the omelet bar. The building is on fire. I'll be right there. Oh, yeah. Onions, green peppers, ham. Do you have ham? Put it in a to-go box. Also, it's good to see your emergency wear is the official uniform of golf grandpas everywhere. I mean, look at him. He looks like a 6-foot-tall Band-Aid. I'm shocked he wasn't wearing a fanny pack and trying to get them to take an expired coupon. I'm sorry, but that is not how a president should look ever, but especially during an emergency. When President Obama got bin Laden, he was in the Situation Room surrounded by generals. Can you imagine Trump overseeing that mission from the omelet bar at his golf club?
Navy SEALs, this is your president. Give me a full situation. Wait, hold on. What's that? Yeah. Hash browns.
And even when he's not in Florida golfing and eating soft foods, it's clear we've elected as our president an adult grandpa who has trouble forming coherent sentences. For example, during his press conference on Friday, Trump explained that he expected a protracted court challenge to his national emergency declaration, although it was less of an explanation and more of a sing-song ramble.
I'll sign the final papers as soon as I get into the Oval Office, and we will have a national emergency, and we will then be sued, and they will sue us in the Ninth Circuit, even though it shouldn't be there. and we will possibly get a bad ruling, and then we'll get another bad ruling, and then we'll end up in the Supreme Court, and hopefully we'll get a fair shake, and we'll win in the Supreme Court, just like the ban. They sued us in the Ninth Circuit, and we lost, and then we lost in the appellate division, and then we went to the Supreme Court, and we won.
He sounds like a five-year-old telling you what he saw at the zoo.
And then we saw the monkeys, and they were eating bananas. And Todd said, we used to be apes. And I said, that's not true. And Todd said, yes, it is. And then a bird crapped on his head.
Of course, it's true that Trump's national emergency declaration will be challenged in court, given that it's very likely unconstitutional. If Trump has any chance of winning in court at all, he has to insist that this was his only choice, that he had one thing he had to say, this is a real emergency. We had to do it this way.
I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster.
You didn't need to do this, then it's not an emergency. That's the exact opposite of an emergency. That's a choice. That's like saying, I'm having emergency surgery to get butt implants. I didn't need to do this, but I hate doing squats. When he heard that, even Rudy Giuliani said, oh no, you shouldn't have said that. Trump might even know on some level that his national emergency stands no chance of surviving a court challenge, and he very likely doesn't care because he's doing this entirely to please a very narrow set of right-wing pundits who hectored him into building the wall, like Rush Limbaugh, who Trump actually name-checked during his press conference on Friday.
Mr. President, could you tell us to what degree some of the outside conservative voices helped to shape your views on this national emergency?
I would talk about it. Look. Sean Hannity has been a terrific, terrific supporter of what I do, not of me. If I changed my views, he wouldn't be with me. Rush Limbaugh, I think he's a great guy. He's a guy who can speak for 3 hours without a phone call. Try doing that sometime. For 3 hours he speaks. He's got one of the biggest audiences in the history of the world. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Try speaking for 3 hours without taking calls. Taking calls is easy. Okay, I'll answer this one, I'll answer that one. He goes for 3 hours, and he's got an audience that's fantastic.
My God, that answer took 3 hours. Also, if he's talking for 3 hours without taking calls, maybe nobody's calling him. We're gonna open the phone line. And even if you put aside the chaos this is causing here at home, it definitely seems like all this is hurting our image around the world, too. Vice President Mike Pence discovered that over the weekend when he mentioned President Trump in a speech in Munich. He clearly thought it was going to be an applause line, and it was definitely not.
I bring greetings from the 45th President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump. Last August...
Say what you want about Mike Pence. The man knows how to hold for silence. I never thought I'd say this, but Pence might have to hire Jeb Bush as his hype man.
I bring greetings from the 45th President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump.
Please clap.
But a reaction like that. A reaction like that must really sting for Trump, who craves validation and praise. In fact, over the weekend, we learned that Trump asked the Prime Minister of Japan to nominate him for a Nobel Prize. A Japanese newspaper reported that Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize last autumn after receiving a request from the U.S. government to do so, which is especially embarrassing, given that on Friday, Trump bragged about the fact that Abe had nominated him for the Nobel Prize and claimed he had no idea he was about to do that.
Prime Minister Abe of Japan gave me the most beautiful copy of a letter that he sent to the people who give out a thing called the Nobel Prize. He said, I have nominated you, or respectfully, on behalf of Japan, I am asking them to give you the Nobel Peace Prize. I said, thank you.
Oh, really? You said thank you? Did you also bribe him?
Here you go, Shinzo. This is for one free omelet. It is expired. So maybe just frame it.
Somehow I doubt that Trump will get that Nobel Peace Prize after unilaterally declaring a non-existent emergency at our border with Mexico. For weeks, Trump has gone back and forth on the possibility of declaring an emergency while also insisting he was already building the wall, as he did right before his State of the Union address, although he was very coy about it.
Are you saying now you expect to declare a national
emergency? I don't want to say, but you'll hear the State of the Union, and then you'll see what happens right after the State of the Union, okay?
You'll hear the State of the Union, and then you'll see what happens after the State of the Union. Trump is so out of his depth, he's dodging questions by explaining how time works. Mr. President, didn't you say Mexico would pay for the wall?
I said Mexico will pay for the wall in the future, not the present. And everyone knows the future comes after the present as opposed to the past, which is before the present. And we can't go back to the past. We can only go back to the future, which I learned from that documentary about Bernie Sanders.
The reason Trump spent so many weeks seesawing back and forth is because Republicans were reportedly urging him not to declare the national emergency, knowing the move would be unpopular and unconstitutional. And yet, as soon as Trump did it, Republicans either supported him or were muted in their criticism, like Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, who only said, "I wish he wouldn't have done it." But Grassley was much angrier when GOP Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took to the Senate floor last week to announce that Trump would declare a national emergency. Grassley was talking about something totally unrelated and got mad when McConnell interrupted him.
Allowing these tax credits, incentives to lapse has created uncertainty for investors and the industry about the availability of these
credits. Would the senator yield?
Jeopardizing the long-term investments necessary for the development of these biofuels. I hope the next time I get a chance to have the floor, I won't be interrupted. I yield the floor and put the rest of my statement in the record.
Mr. President.
Leader McConnell.
You know you're old when the youngin' disrespecting you is Mitch McConnell. That's how loud Grassley yells when Trump cuts him in line at the omelet bar. We're at the whims of angry old men screaming about stuff they hear on talk radio or see on Fox News. Trump just rambles aimlessly from one topic to the next, and his alternate reality is reinforced by the right-wing pundits who support him. Trump is obviously unfit to be president, and if someone beats him in 2020, that person's going to get
a thing called the Nobel Prize.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is the host of the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning show Last Week Tonight, which just returned for its sixth season on HBO. Please welcome back to the show our friend John Oliver. Welcome back!
Thank you for having me back. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to have you back on the air. You returned from a little bit of a break. I know you don't really ever take a break.
No, we worked through the break. So we were planning some ridiculous stories for later this year.
Yes. Yep. And I should, you know, I think that no one works harder than you or your staff. And so it's very hard to catch you on vacation. Sometimes I will see you and I'll think, oh, you didn't have a show last week. Maybe you'll be, like, refreshed and you just always look exhausted.
No. I mean, that's something to do with work, and I do have resting, exhausted face anyway. People do. Even when I come back from vacation, sometimes people look and go, "Is everything all right? Wow, it's tough right now, isn't it? Well, this is 3 days on a beach."
You never...
Okay.
You never stop working, but what you do lose when you're on a break is the outlet to process the news. I know even when we have a couple weeks off, that is the hardest part for me. Can you appreciate being unplugged from the news at all, or do you just miss being able to talk about it?
Well, it's nice. In general, it's nice to unplug from something that's poisonous, right? But the problem is, when there's poison around, you kind of want to know what's happening. So, it kind of feels reckless and irresponsible to say, I won't concern myself with the fact that America's destroying itself. I'll surprise myself 3 months later to see what's happened. So it's nice to have an outlet again. Do you struggle?
I mutter to myself a lot more when we don't have the show.
Oh, really?
You know, because this is my, this is like a very polite way to do what would just be muttering if I didn't have a TV show.
Yeah, it's a very erudite mutter that you do, that you vomit into a camera.
Yeah.
Also, you just like walk around
I just,
and
like
say to the dog,
town and, like,
why was he at an omelet bar?
Yeah. But here's the thing, and I, you know, you guys obviously do stories that are sort of longer tail as opposed to just talking about what happened yesterday. Right. What happened yesterday, if you have a week off, you don't have to pay that much attention because by the following Monday, nothing that matters, nothing that happened matters anymore.
That's it. That is the sense where time has kind of changed.
Yeah.
In that it used to be that you could assume that if something happened in the week that you're still in, it would have a place in people's memory. Now, 72 hours is a long time.
Yeah.
So often we find ourselves like saying, oh, and he did this at the start of this week, this human week.
Yeah.
This actual week that we started on Monday. There's a lot. Generally, we don't talk about anything in the week that doesn't happen kind of Thursday night, Friday.
Which is...
There's no point.
It's nice. You do provide a nice service in that, obviously, things are crazy here right now. You do remind the world that other places are crazy.
But that's a tough sell, though. That's the problem. So it's difficult when you're doing international stories on the show. Like last year, we wanted to do a show about the Brazilian election. And it's a tough sell to say, I know things are rough in America right now, but we need to talk about Brazil. And you can kind of feel going, not now, we don't. It's like saying to someone whose house is on fire, there's a house on fire three streets away. Go, any other time, I would give a about that, but my possessions are burning. So it's tough to kind of say we need to talk about Brazil and not have that sense of, do we?
Yeah.
Do we definitely?
You talked about Brexit last night.
Yes.
Obviously, you have a connection to that.
Yes.
Do you feel like that's a story that people here have any sense of exactly how insane it is?
Well, you can get a sense of how insane it is just from being secure in the knowledge that it's crazy what's happening. Now, the problem, as you go into actually what is happening, the details of it are so absurd that it kind of exacerbates the insanity, but it does take a long time to understand exactly why Northern Ireland and the Northern Ireland border is so critical here to this deal that isn't actually a deal, it's a deal just to get to an interim period, to get to the deal. It's fun to understand all of that if you are into masochism. But you can just reassure that what Britain is doing is driving itself off a cliff. They are Thelma and Louising themselves off a cliff.
The next cliff opportunity we have here seems to be the 2020 election.
Yes.
That seems to be a good cliff opportunity.
Yeah. That's definitely a good time to look over the cliff. Like, I don't know. We somehow lived through the last one. Maybe we can fly.
Yeah. No, we can't. Nobody. We're going to live forever.
Exactly.
You, obviously, one of the things happening now, a lot of people are announcing, and cable news certainly is doing a lot of coverage of 2020 already. How do you feel about that? A little early?
It's a little early, right, because the bar's pretty low now. Whenever anyone announces for president now, you just go, sure, fine. add it to the list, you're fine. Kamala Harris, great. Bernie Sanders, great. A tortoise walking across an abandoned Wendy's parking lot? Has he got an exploratory committee? You would work as well. The bar is so low. So all they're going to do now is just announce they're running for president and then go raise money. So there's not much to see there.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, I think, giving it too much attention right now when there's plenty of other that we should be looking at.
What about this idea of you want to, you can get caught up in the everyday of what's happening with this presidency. You don't want to get complacent. You don't want to get desensitized to the idea that madness is happening, but you also don't want to be screaming and yelling all the time. Like, how do you find a balance there?
I don't know. That's a kind of existential question, isn't it? How do we all seek happiness right now that isn't, at its root, fraudulent? oh, God, that was a truly depressing for the audience. Listen, we're just trying to have a night out in New York, dude. I didn't come here for nihilism.
They were like, John Oliver's on, he's going to give us an update on Brazil.
Now he's saying we're all dust in the wind of history. It's difficult. It's difficult. I think that the problem is that at the moment, like, not only with Trump, who is president, so you have to pay attention to him like you would pay attention to a bull in a china shop, but also the new candidates, it kind of shows that we're concentrating too much on personalities right now. Which is hard to criticize when those personalities are in the White House. But we do have systemic problems underneath them. So I can't really get excited about new candidates yet because it's 20 months away
from
the
election. Yeah, it's a long time away.
It's a long time.
You were not always, at a young age, people probably assumed that you were talking about international news from behind a desk. But you, your first on-camera job was you were in an adaptation of Charles Dickens' Bleak House.
So that is actually true.
And I know that's true. We do have to hammer home that that's true, because that sounds like
true.
A joke you would
it
make.
It also sounds like an offensive stereotype about a British person. You were all probably in Dickensian dramas growing up. Sadly, I was. So, yeah, no one has really found this out here other than your staff.
So, here's a photo.
This is it.
Yeah.
So, what happened? Yeah, that's right. This is what the president has done to me. there's a child with light in his eyes there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Basically, when I was 6 years old, there was the BBC were shooting a costume drama called Bleak House nearby my school, and they wanted a kid with dark hair and brown eyes, and I was 2 for 2 on that. So yeah, I was in this like a very very lavish Dickensian drama for the BBC with like Dame Diana Rigg. I didn't understand what anything was. I didn't know what was happening. They just said, "Do you want to do this?" I said, "Is it at the same time as school?" They said, "Yes, you'll have to leave school." And I said, "Yes," before they ended that conversation. Yeah, it was a very, very weird experience.
Here's a clip. I believe your character's name is Felix?
That's right. I was Felix Particle, and I'm an orphan.
Okay.
Yeah.
You may have seen the names of my 5 boys printed on a subscription list. Felix, 8 pence to the superannuated widows.
Yes.
Wow, really good. Really good. That is...
Thank you. Thank you.
That is like one more element of the stereotype is that you played an orphan.
It is so offensive. Like, if I'd spent half my childhood up a chimney, that's the only way that you could make that more reductive view of British people. You may think about that scene. The only thing I remember about it is them saying, "Hey, you need to act bored now." And I remember thinking, "Oh, that's okay. I am bored."
My parents watched a ton of PBS when we were growing up. They watched a ton of costume dramas. Every one of them, from my perspective, could have been called Bleak House.
Yeah, that is absolutely fair.
Yeah.
That's right. It's just that's an all-encompassing title. the only other thing I remember from that was Diana Rigg, who was like one of the great British actresses. She gave me aniseed balls on set.
I don't know. What are aniseed balls?
You don't have aniseed balls?
No.
Here? No, right, because you value flavour. But is there anyone here from Britain? Yeah, do you remember aniseed balls?
I do indeed.
Yeah, were they pleasant to put in your face?
No, they're disgusting.
Right, they are. They are absolutely disgusting.
And then by the way, no, that's the most I've never seen someone so effectively interact with an audience member on our show. Like, you were so clear.
It's just, that is the way that British people reminisce about their past. Do you remember that? Yes, it was awful.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. It is always so wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much.
Here.
Give it up
Thank
for
you.
John Oliver, everybody. Last week tonight airs Sunday nights on HBO.
All right, hi, this is Henry. I'm here with John Oliver.
Hello, Henry.
John, it's such a pleasure to have you back at the show.
It is a genuine pleasure to be here.
Good. It was very fun to watch. It seemed like it was fun.
Oh, I love coming here.
Yeah, we love having you.
It's just, it's nice to talk to him.
Good. I wanted to ask you more about Dickens.
Yes.
Let's just go into it.
Yes.
So, okay, you do this Dickens project.
I do.
And then is there any part of you that's, like, interested in acting from that?
No. Because I don't know if you saw from the clip, I was not really acting.
You were there.
That's a bored child being bored. And then there's other scenes where, I think you mentioned, where I'm being dragged around like a muddy field. And again, I'm not acting being dragged around. That's a child being dragged. So, it didn't really occur to me at 6 years old that... It was a career. It occurred to me that was a very weird way to spend a few weeks.
Were you just in soccer then, mostly?
Yes.
Yeah.
All I wanted.
Because that was your goal, right?
That was my goal, and the fact you put that in the past tense is kind of brutal.
Oh, you think you still have that?
Intellectually, I know I don't, but you know, there is part of me that hasn't fully painted the window shut on that.
Do you still play ever?
I play it whenever I go back to England. I mean, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to. I'm
training.
Older than all professional footballers. But I did like to... I really clung on to that dream for a long time.
Yeah. And now you've got kids. Are you trying to get them interested more in sports than...
No, not in sports. I don't really care what they do in their life, as long as they're nice. Yeah. But they have to support Liverpool. That's it. They have to support Liverpool. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
They're going to have so many choices. They're going to be lucky. They're going to have a lot of choices. That is not one. They have to support Liverpool.
Do they have like Liverpool like onesies already? And was that very early on?
Actually, Seth and I gave each other team kits for our kids. So I sent Ash a West Ham shirt.
Oh yeah, Seth is a big West Ham fan. Exactly. Yeah.
He said the other day, the proudest I've been to my child so far in his short life was that he said to me, "I want to have hair like Mo Salah." I said, "That can be arranged." Don't say that if you don't mean it, kid, because we will go to a hair studio. Is that a hair studio?
A studio. No, it's a hair studio, I think.
A studio? Where do you... I was going to... hairdressers, right? You don't say hairdresser. What do you say here?
I recently called someone... this is very bad. A hairstylist, a haircutter.
A haircutter.
Which is not the term. Really? It's a hairstylist or a barber.
You do say barber.
Or a... But I feel like barber and hairstylist are different, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a hairdresser is...
You do say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'm just wondering how you categorize each person into, like, is there a crossover? Is a barber also
a very literal way to describe what someone...
I think it's offensive, right. Too. Yeah. I think it really diminishes the work.
He's calling a chef a food warmer. That's right. A comedian, a word sayer. Yeah.
But you're going to find your son to one of these types of professions.
Yeah, I want to take him to a game because it was the most kind of memorable moment of my childhood was going to my first Liverpool game. And I think I was about 8 years old when I went. And so I want to do it around the same time.
Oh, it's really sweet.
Yeah, I cannot overstress the extent to which he can't choose a different team unless he wants to hurt me in a way that I know I cannot recover from. If he wears a Man United shirt, I'm going to have to tell him to go himself, and he's three.
Your own son.
I will confidently look into his eyes and say, go yourself with that.
What does your wife think about this? Does she care either way?
I think she has, in the past, there were windows where she was trying to say, do you think you care about this a healthy amount? And I wouldn't defend it. I would say, no, this is not a healthy amount, but the ship has sailed. So this is just something I'm afraid we're both going to have to live with.
It's really wonderful.
It affects my mood.
Next time you're on the show, we're going to see where you're at.
If Mo Salah leaves Liverpool.
Yeah. Oh, then what?
Then I think that is the final piece of hope I have for humanity gone. Because athletes, I don't know if your listeners probably don't even know who he is, but athletes are like universally not great people. Usually. Footballers in England are not a very pleasant group. Mo Salah is so... He seems so kind, mm-hmm. so happy, so sensitive. I love everything about him.
Do you follow American football?
I did for a bit. I got really got into it very much when I first moved here. And for 3 years, played fantasy football a lot at the Daily Show. So I was really, really into it. And you know what? It seems to me like the horrendous head injuries with lasting mental... consequences has taken the shine off the game for me.
Just a little bit.
Just
huh?
a little
Just a
bit.
Little bit yeah.
I really liked it for a few years, and then I thought, hold on, what is this? Should this be happening in a Roman Coliseum? It's only a lateral move to release a lion onto the field right now to eat some people. This seems savage.
I remember when you were here right after a Super Bowl, it's like the Monday after Super Bowl, and you were talking about how this had never seemed odd to me as an American, that we just put fighter jets over the stadium. And I mean, that's just like part of halftime.
Everything about the Super Bowl is just spectacular.
Did you enjoy Adam Levine?
No, of course not. No, I didn't enjoy it at all in any way. Visually, my ears didn't like it. My eyes didn't like it. I didn't like anything about it. It was very bad. You know, art is subjective. I think you can objectively say that was awful.
I don't think anyone loved it.
I would challenge you to love it. If someone said I love it, I would say, okay, pen, paper, I'm going to need you to back that up. You loved it. It was love. The experience you had was I loved it. It couldn't be any better. You're allowed to like it. I'm starting to think I'm swinging a bit hard at the room 5 here. They tried. They put on a show.
It's very sweet.
They put on a show. Some people like Maroon 5.
It's a very diplomatic recovery here.
If you can genuinely find enjoyment from it, I think that's great. I've tried and I can't.
Yeah.
Because I found their music catchy in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought, do I like this? And then I've thought about it and come to the conclusion, no, I do not.
Here's the thing. If you found it catchy in the past, you should have still found it catchy because it was the same songs.
I don't want to come across like a very repressed 1920s, like, British writer of A Book of Manners, but I truly believe his shirt could have remained on.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think he was at a fork in the road, shirt on, shirt off, and I would have chosen a different fork for him.
There are a few occasions in that type of performance where the shirt has to come off.
No, that's right. I do not believe it was so hot that he had to take off what was
February.
A vest. That's right. Indoors in Atlanta in February. Yeah, I've seen better halftime shows.
That's fair. Yeah, I think we all have.
And I haven't seen worse.
John, thank you so much for being here. This is such a pleasure.
It was really fun.
Please come back soon.
I will.
Okay, good.
You have my word.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.